The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.
This is Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio.
Hi, everyone. I'm Jason Kelly.
And I'm Mike Lynch.
And I'm Michael Barr. And this is the Bloomberg Business of Sports podcast, where we explore the big money issues in the world of sports.
So, guys, we're at a really interesting point in the sports calendar year, I feel like, made more interesting by the fact that things that were supposed to happen last year are now happening this year, things that just finished up that should have been finished a long time ago. And so we take stock of all of that, and a lot of changes coming up as we think about the fall and college football and a new economic landscape for that. So lots to dig into as we begin the week. Let's start with the Olympics, if we can. I don't know about you guys, but I feel like I'm reflecting a little bit of the national zeitgeist and maybe the global zeitgeist in saying, oh yeah, the Olympics are happening. Cool. I'll read up on it, I guess. Mm. I mean, it's just not capturing the imagination, Lynching.
And I'm sure I'm not alone in this, and you guys probably experienced the same thing. It was the number one question I was asked over the weekend. Do you have any interest, Lynchy, in watching the Olympics? Have you watched any of the Olympics? Did you watch the opening ceremonies? And I said, you know, I don't have any interest. I did, out of curiosity, tune into the opening ceremonies, basically to see how many countries I'd never heard of before. And I wanted to see the United States team come in, but it took so long for them to get into the arena that I just shut it off. Beautiful weather. It's the end of July. And the last thing that me or anyone else is going to do is probably sit on the couch and watch the Olympics, and the numbers reflect it.
Yeah. And so, Barr, how much do you think it's about lack of star power, lack of storylines, sort of off rhythm? I mean, it's 2021. This was supposed to happen a year ago. We're all pretty well trained as sports fans for the cadence of when the Olympics, the World Cup, all these things happen. What do you think is driving it? What's driving it for you?
I think part of it is simply the time difference. Yeah. Tokyo's 13 hours ahead. When back in the day, when you watched the Olympics, everything was comprised in the prime time viewing. So, you know, and what Lynchy was saying is like, okay, you had your fun in the daytime, and then in the night you came and you watched the Olympics. And now it's being live streamed in the morning. And people, quite frankly, throughout the day, they've got stuff to do. They're going to go and do other things. So I think that's part of the problem. And to be honest, and I'm sorry, I'm not any sport I admire and the athleticism involved, but it's hard for me to get into skateboarding. I mean, you know, but I don't know if that's for the younger crowd or what it is.
Yeah, I mean, I will tell you. I mean, I think the point about the broadcast and the timing is well taken. I think part of it is that there is a sense, of course, with the internet that you kind of know everything that's happened. Yeah. And so when you're tuning in, if you've been paying at all attention to Twitter, ESPN.com, or any other social media or news source, you kind of know what's happened already. And so, you know, I tuned in on Saturday, for instance, to see a little bit of the U.S. women's national team playing soccer, in part because they had lost to Sweden. That was a huge upset. They were, you know, trying to make good against New Zealand. I already knew what was going to happen. And so, you know, you watch, as you guys know, you watch very differently and candidly more distractedly if you already know the outcome. And so I tuned in. I was like, well, I know this is going to end up 6-1. I wonder when they're going to score the goals. You know, so it's just there's a little bit of that. I will also say I think it's an odd time for an American viewer, or an odd experience for the American viewer, that a lot of our teams and a lot of our athletes are coming in second. Katie Ledecky losing the gold medal, winning silver, of course, but you know, she was obviously a heavy favorite in anything that she does. You know, one of the most decorated Olympians of all time. You know, she came in second in her first event. She's going to win some gold medals, I think it's safe to say. Team USA, we're going to talk about the NBA in a second. I mean, that's a debacle. I mean, this is an unraveling of a team that was once, you know, the U.S. men's basketball team. You know, you go back to the Dream Team and whatnot we've talked about on this show before. You know, and even the women's gymnastics team, which, you know, probably will end up fine, and Simone Biles will end up winning more and more gold. But, you know, they came out losing to Russia, I believe, you know, in the opening round, you know, coming in second. We don't like coming in second. And so, candidly, people aren't going to tune in if it's just going to be kind of middle of the pack. And again, a silver medal. I mean, I have zero Olympic medals. But I do know how people think, Lynchy. And I think all of these things are combining to just give a very meh impression of all this.
Well, Barr hit the nail on the head, 13 hours ahead of time. Now, if this was 1968, we'd have no way of knowing what was happening, and we might tune in at night. But I read all about the United States basketball, men's basketball team's loss to France during the day. And then I was on the couch, I popped on the thing, and there it is. It's the first quarter of the men's basketball team. I said, I know what happened in this thing, and I went right to the golf. Then I went to the Red Sox-Yankees game.
Right.
You know, Bill Belichick was asked last year after the first game they played without any fans in the stands. He said, what did it feel like? And he went, practice. It felt like practice. Mm-hmm. And that's what it feels like to me when I watch these. And I feel bad for all these Olympians who have dedicated their entire life for this one moment. But it feels like I'm watching a dress rehearsal rather than the real thing.
Yeah, I do think that has something to do with it. Even if you can't quite put your finger on it, when you tune in, it feels completely different. I think especially because now in 2021, and who knows what's going to happen the rest of the year. I mean, with the Delta variant, there are all sorts of questions, and we're going to get into what's going on in the NFL, which is a huge story in just a minute. But I think at a time when we have seen full arenas, we have seen full stadiums, to then it's a little bit of, and I don't, you know, I'm being a little bit overly glib here, but there's a little bit of this like kind of flashback mentality, almost like PTSD, to like, oh my God, this is what we were doing a year ago and watching sports with no arenas. It doesn't make me feel good. I don't want to see that. I don't want to be reminded of what was a very terrible time last year when we were seeing, you know, football matches and other things, the NBA bubble being played without any fans. So I feel bad for the Olympians themselves from an economic perspective. We've talked about this and highly recommend our conversation about the business of the Olympics and the economics of the Olympics from a couple weeks ago. This is a disaster for the Japanese and a disaster for Tokyo, no question about it, and maybe a disaster for the entire Olympic movement because it's really going to be set back in economically. So we'll see what the ratings end up being. As you guys have said, all of these things colliding for really a bad storyline. Speaking of ratings, the final numbers are out for the NBA Finals, and I think we all anticipated this might happen because of the teams that were playing, even though there was a lot of excitement about Giannis versus Chris Paul, and you know these are two basketball-crazy towns. So here it is by the numbers, guys. 9.9 million average viewers per game in this year's NBA Finals. So let's set aside last year, the bubble down in Orlando, because that was 7.5 million average nightly viewers or average game viewers. This is the worst since 2007, the second worst during this century. So, you know, 21 series. And just for perspective, the high point to show you how far it's fallen, the high watermark was 2017, and that was 20.4 million viewers a game. That was Warriors versus Cavs, for those who, you know, can't name every single matchup per year. So 20.4 million versus 9.9. Lynchy, that's bad news for the NBA.
Well, to quote an old song from the 60s, there ain't no cure for the summertime blues. And I'm going to blame it, A, on the middle of the summer. B, you've got Milwaukee, which is market number 37. Phoenix is market number 11. And again, people, and the tip-off is like at 9:15, 9:20 Eastern time. You just can't hang in there till midnight. If you love basketball, the Bucks are a fun team to watch. And I think most people were rooting for them because Giannis is a very unselfish player, and they probably demonstrate team basketball as well as anybody. But this is, remember, the finals always had a Kobe, a LeBron, a Steph Curry in it over the years. And, you know, Giannis playing in Milwaukee hasn't really elevated himself marketing-wise to those three guys right there. But he's on his way. And that's that. There are all kinds of things you can factor in there for those low ratings.
Yeah, I mean, and ultimately, the NBA had a decision to make in terms of when they started the season. They ended up starting it earlier than a lot of players, including the aforementioned King James, wanted to. They got back on the court. They played, you know, a shorter but still pretty fulsome season. There were a lot of injuries, maybe owing to that toward the end of the season. It felt like, even to those of us watching, much less to the players, it felt like a grind bar as we got toward the end. And, you know, we're going to be back at it but before too long with the NBA. But, you know, probably the right decision to get back on the court, of course. And there were a lot of business decisions made to get them there, but kind of ending with a bit of a whimper.
I'm just wondering, going deeper here, have we hit a point society-wise where we're kind of hitting a saturation with sports altogether? Because you can see any sport live, whether it's streamed for the most part, whatever. Back in the day, you know, you had to wait for the NBA game of the week or your local game. And now you can see pretty much go to your the NBA network and you can pretty much get any game you want, and it goes for the same for the other major sports. I'm just wondering if we've hit a saturation now.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about that. I mean, I think the consumption of sports is shifting for sure. And one thing that I will say, and we're all doing a lot of work on this right now, and when we think about the modern fan, I think it is worth pointing out that ratings may not be the best measure of things. I mean, we talk a lot about them. We know that the business is largely built on them in many ways. TV contracts are still the lifeblood, as we know. You know, broadcast TV contracts are still the lifeblood, we know. But, and maybe this is me being a little, you know, trying to be optimistic here. We know the way fans are engaging on social media. We know how people are taking it in, but they are not watching in the same way. And, you know, they're watching highlights. I mean, I think about the way that people, you know, the way that like late night television has evolved, right? In the sense that you don't have people staying up to watch those shows on linear television necessarily. And yet the social media, the YouTube clips, you know, everything that's shared on Twitter or Instagram or what have you has been huge for the Jimmy Fallons and the rest of the gang in late night. So it's possible that what we're witnessing is just a shift in consumption. The problem is how, or the question is how do the economics really catch up there? And I think a lot remains to be seen.
The countdown has begun. This May, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg, held in conjunction with our official partners, the Qatar Ministry of Commerce and Industry and Media City Qatar, and premier sponsor QNB. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections and gain unique insights. Learn more at QatarEconomicForum.com.
All right, we got to talk some college football because this is a massive, massive potential realignment. Oklahoma and Texas, Lynchy, may be saying peace out to the Big 12 and headed, where else would you head? To the SEC. What did you think about this?
My first thought was the Southeast Conference wants to become the Amazon of college sports. that was my first reaction. You know, when is enough enough? And they're the biggest, most powerful, most lucrative conference in all of college football and maybe all of college sports. And now you bring in two gigantic teams with long history of great, great clubs going back to the 40s in Oklahoma and Texas in the 60s. And you just say Texas, Oklahoma, who are big rivals, by the way.
Yeah.
And bringing them now into the SEC. You know, the people over in the Big 12 now aren't happy about it. Texas A&M wants to be the only team from the state of Texas in the Southeast Conference. They don't want to share the SEC with the Longhorns, who are the kings of that state. And the same thing with Oklahoma State. They would like their rivalry with Oklahoma, but that's going to be gone now when they take off, if they take off, and they probably will, because it's the old, if you hear about it, it's probably going to happen.
Yeah, and the reports are basically saying that these discussions have been going on for months, and they've just kind of broken out into the open. Does it change the way you look at college football, Bar?
No, not at all. In fact, this is, I mean, I get it. You're right. Texas A&M is like, oh, come on, man. You don't do that. But
we had our special thing.
Yeah, this was our thing, and you messed it all up. And, but to see Texas and Oklahoma go to the SEC, I'm in. And I can see a lot of Texas fans and a lot of Oklahoma fans saying, you know what, okay. And it's about to get really rugged in the SEC now.
Well, I mean, here's one thing that I think is definitely worth mentioning, and a number of people picked up on this over the weekend, and it was certainly one of the first thoughts I had. I think you can't separate this SEC news from three other letters, which is NIL. And what you are seeing is an economic realignment as much as anything. You've seen it from the broadcast side. We talk a lot about that, all the attention that's been paid. You see it from the perspective of the college football playoff, where the SEC has been dominant. You see it in programs, of course, like Alabama, sort of standing out above the rest in all aspects. But if money is going to be made by athletes and you're an athlete, and Barr, this goes back to something I believe you were talking about, you brought up with Darren Heitner when we spoke with him last week, who's an NIL expert. And again, highly recommend you listen to that conversation if you're interested in going deep on NIL. If you are a big time player, you want to go where you're going to make the most money. This is not necessarily going forward just a bet on, all right, if I play at Alabama, and even if I'm a lower tier player, I'm going to get more exposure to pro scouts. I'm going to get more national media exposure, et cetera, et cetera. Now you could be making actual money when you're at Alabama, owing to the new rules around name, image, and likeness. You had Nick Saban come out last week and say his sophomore quarterback, who's essentially yet to take a snap, has already reached seven figures. Now, people are questioning whether that's actually true in terms of how much the quarterback is making, Bryce Young is making. And the reports I saw over the weekend said, you know, probably topping out the high end at $500,000, $600,000, which, by the way, guys, still a lot of money. And also more than zero, which is what they were getting before. So that's where the money is gravitating towards. So why wouldn't you, if you were a college president, want to be in the top league? That's where the money's going to be. I mean, it's just that simple, Lynchy.
And I can only imagine what their television contract is going to do if you bring in two teams like Texas and Oklahoma.
Right.
I worry about the rivalries. I mean, I know like a lot of these big rivalries are gone because they're in different conferences. You've got Auburn and Alabama in the SEC, and you got Mississippi State. But everybody else now has to go outside the conference. Georgia and Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech's in the ACC. Florida State. They're in two different conferences. But you know what? I don't think anybody really cares about that anymore. They care about the money. They care about the exposure. They care about the recruits. And now name, image, and likeness. This is just the beginning. When Nick Saban, you're going to see Dan Mullen coming out at Florida. Well, you know, our athletes have gotten this wonderful deal here. You come on down to the Gators, and you're going to get yourself the Jason Kelly Chevrolet is going to use you right away and give you a good chunk of money while you're down here.
Yeah. Well, and one of the things that I saw, which will come as no surprise to either of you guys, is that it was not an accident. I mean, Nick Saban is a pretty smart fella, and it was no accident that he was making these comments in front of a bunch of high school coaches, or high school ADs, I believe, is who he was addressing when he let that slip. And in part, that one of the things I read said, Nick Saban doesn't have any intimate knowledge of what the negotiations are. I mean, he's spitballing and freelancing a little bit on that, but he's talking his own book. He's selling his own program in the same way that you know, put your arm around a recruit and bring him onto campus and show him around this amazing facility. I always think, Lynchy, about the mention you made a few months ago about the miniature golf course that they have at Clemson, I believe, in the football facility. It's like, yeah, just practice your putting. But you know, all of these are things that you're bringing to the fore. And if you're saying, if you're ultimately selling a high school coach or a high school AD and ultimately a high school player, you know, you're going to say, listen, we've got the most robust program, even though the university doesn't administer it. Look what our players are making off the field. Look what rock stars they are in Tuscaloosa and in Alabama and across the Southeast and all the exposure. And your point is exactly right, Lynchy, on the TV contracts, because if they've got the best players, then you're going to have advertisers gravitate toward that, you know, more and more teams. I mean, you're talking about, you know, going to so the SEC would become so they have 14 teams now, I believe.
Yeah,
they
would, to 16 yes. now.
They would go to 16. The Big 12, by the way, is only 10 schools right now. So
I know.
They would go to 8. I mean, the Big 12 may go away, or at the very least, I mean, with all due respect to University of Cincinnati, I mean, that's a team that's been mentioned as, you know, coming into the new look Big 12. So it's like you lose Texas and you get Cincinnati. Sorry, Cincinnati. the Bearcats are not Longhorns. I'm just saying. Sorry. Like, in terms of national interest and heritage and history and all of that. So this is pretty radical. I was texting this morning with a college president, and they were saying this is just bananas. It's bananas how all this is playing out. Because ultimately, these are institutional decisions that have to be made.
Well, the SEC already is going to leave CBS in 3 years and going to go to ESPN in a $3 billion deal. And so, they are going to be the Amazon of college sports.
Yeah.
No other way to put it.
Yeah. So watch this space, and, you know, what realignment happens on the back of this will be fascinating to watch. All right, as we wrap this up, let's talk a little bit of football on the professional level, the actual professional level. The NFL, this is a story that I think we're going to be following certainly for weeks and maybe deep into the season, how the NFL is going to deal with COVID and, more pointedly, with vaccinations. This is really coming to a head, it feels like, Lynchy.
Well, last Friday, this news broke when the memo came out from Roger Goodell, and we said the owners have the hammer and they're going to start using it. And over the weekend, we saw two assistant coaches who do not want to get vaccinated, one in New England, one in Minnesota, fired from their jobs. Now the National Football League is going to fine players a little bit more than $14,000 if they fail to follow protocol. Last year, the National Football League lost $4 billion. That doesn't sit well with the owners. It takes a long time to make up $4 billion with a B. And average attendance last year, I mean, they had maybe a million total of the whole year. Usually they have 17 million. And the word forfeit was the key word. That's the radioactive word in that memo last week, I think. Forfeit a game if you have somebody that doesn't follow protocol. As we mentioned last week, a home game is worth, on average, $11.6 million to an NFL home team for a home game. Obviously, the Cowboys are much higher. The Cincinnati Bengals would be much lower. But that's a lot of money to forfeit in one game because somebody either refuses to get vaccinated, doesn't wear a mask, and doesn't follow protocol.
So if you're a player, Michael Barr, what do you do here?
Well, if I'm a vaccinated player and I lose my money from the game because the other team, and I said this last week, because the other team didn't do what they needed to do, I'm mad as all get up. And that's the part where I have the problem. Don't penalize the pay of the team that's not forfeiting. If you're going to do it for the other team, that's the thing. If they forfeit the game, well, then you also forfeit your pay. But the other team who's doing it right, that's not fair. And I said this last week. I'll say it again, and I'll say it until the cows come home. That's just not right.
So I'll take it a step further. If you feel that way about the other team, how are you going to feel about the guy three lockers down from you who mm-hmm. basically loses you a payday. I think you're going to have, I mean, we all know, not that any of us have played professional football, but locker rooms are already, especially pro football locker rooms, are already pretty high octane places. If you get guys basically, you know, going up to each other and basically saying, hey, man, you're losing me tens of thousands, maybe millions of dollars because I can't play the game. I did the right thing. I did what I think we're all agreeing is the right thing and got vaccinated. You refuse to do it. You're costing my family money. Like, I mean, this is going to be a real live tension point because this isn't a like, well, let's agree to disagree. Like, you're messing with my money.
Yeah. You listen, there's one major rule. You can call me any name you want in the book, but don't mess with the dinner plate.
Yeah.
And that's what's happening when this goes down.
So, Lynch, how does this play out, you think?
Well, wait till the first player gets cut who is not vaccinated.
Yeah.
And you're going to hear a firestorm there. I'm waiting to hear from the Players Association. And also, I think a lot of these things are going to wind up in litigation.
Yeah.
You know, it is a private enterprise, the National Football League, and they can issue whatever they want. But there is a union. There's a CBA in place for the Players Association. And that's really something that they encourage players to get vaccinated, but they can't force them to get vaccinated. And watch out when this first player gets cut who is unvaccinated. And then the players, there could be a work stoppage. Who knows?
Yeah, right. Well, and you're already seeing, you know, players sort of go out on social media, then delete posts, and then re-up, and then sort of reconsider, and all these different things. I mean, listen, these are, for some people, these are very complicated decisions that they're making. I mean, I do think we're at a really interesting economic moment. I mean, looking beyond even the public health implications, in many ways, from an economic perspective, I think everybody is seeing how bleak it was when the economy shut down. And if what we need to do to avoid that again is get more people vaccinated, I think the pressure is going to start to build. And those locker rooms that we were talking about are a bit of a microcosm. You know, you're seeing it in workplaces where companies are starting to maybe just turn the dial a little bit and make it a little bit more uncomfortable for people who are, you know, holding out about getting vaccinated to make it so that, you know, they're kind of different rules for different people, those who are vaccinated and those who aren't. So we'll see. But it does feel like the NFL is going to be the tip of the spear here. And you wonder if they're a bit of a canary in the coal mine when it comes to other professional sports, because, you know, we'll have basketball back again before too long. But as we talked about, I think last fall, you know, NFL, I mean, you think about just the sheer number of people who are involved in a National Football League team, the players, the coaches, the staff, all the traveling that's involved. And it's just incredible. It's just incredible.
This is the Bloomberg Business of Sports podcast. I'm Michael Barr. Follow me on Twitter at Big Barr Sports.
And I'm Mike Lynch. You can follow me at Lynchy WCBB.
And I'm Jason Kelly. Follow me at Jason Kelly News. We're here for you each and every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday, exploring the world of money and sports.
You're listening to Bloomberg Business of Sports from Bloomberg Radio around the world and online wherever you get your podcasts.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code Radio20 at BloombergLive.com/greenfestival.